This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
To rid the beloved building of these vile creatures, always looking for new ways to spread the ridiculous message of tolerance, compassion, equality, and justice. KPFTAuction.org. Stay away from it. It might give you hope or encourage you to think there are others like you. Saturday evening, July 18th. Don't be seen with the misguided listeners and supporters at the KPFT Auction. It's not the natural order of things, really. KPFTAuction.org. Donate. Volunteer. Wear a costume. Give the creeps your money.
KPFT Houston. Live Oak Friends Meeting invites you to spend an evening with singer-songwriter Hank Wojcie. That little Quaker meeting place up in the Heights will be hosting this special evening to benefit the Quaker Peace Festival to be held this fall. The Muse's Muse states that Hank Wojcie is a Texas-based songwriter who handles protests and social observations in the style of Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, Bruce Springsteen, and John Prine, and that he is a worthy voice in that cause. This concert will be held on July 10th at 7:30 p.m. in the Quaker Meeting House located at 1318 West 26th Street, Houston, Texas 77008. For more information, visit friendshouston.org or call 832-466-1342. This is KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
And Glenn Holt. And Jennifer, we have something a little bit different this evening, don't we?
We have something very special tonight. We've got
very timely.
Very timely. The 81st legislative session ended here not too long ago. But in that same vein, they have to go back to Austin for a special session. But tonight we have Garnett Coleman, representative for 147, Ellen Cohen with 134, Jessica Farrar, 148, and Representative Christy Thiebold, 133. They're all going to be part of a panel to discuss the last legislature and give us a little heads up on what the special session is going to be about.
And then in the second hour, we're going to do sort of a wrap-up of Pride, all of us who participated some way or the other.
Who were out there sweating their hearts out.
Yes, and then we will be playing News Wrap from This Way Out in the end of this hour. In the end of the second hour, we're playing the rest of This Way Out, which includes audio file. And then we have a Pacific Election special sort of tutorial that we'll be doing in the next hour. So all that and more is coming up on Queer Voices. A couple of things that happened recently, of course, Pride, and we're going to talk about the next hour, but President Obama had his fireside chat. I don't know. He had some people from the original Stonewall in the White House today.
Yes, he did.
And we thought maybe there'd be some announcements, as far as I can tell.
Well, that's what was anticipated, that he would make some announcements concerning GLBT issues, and it wasn't forthcoming.
No, it wasn't. So I guess we're not being surprised that much now. If you got to see Colbert last Thursday, and you can check it on the web, on ComedyCentral.com, there was a great, he had one of the Stonewall survivors on, and it was, I mean, Colbert was sort of trying to make fun of everything, but he wasn't like being offensive. It was really sort of funny. So Pride was as far as I can tell, it was a success. We are going to be, covering it in the next hour, but I think we all had a good time, and it didn't rain on our parade as usual.
Yes, that was a pleasant surprise, except that we haven't had rain in so long, we could use a little now.
Well, maybe tonight. Maybe tonight. So all that's coming up, but let's listen to some music now.
Yeah.
Once or twice a week, whether I need it or not,
That was Mark Islam and a song called Trick from the album from 2001 called The Fine Print. Again, that was Mark Islam. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Jack Valinsky.
And we're here in the studio. We have Ellen Cohen, State Representative Ellen
let's
Cohen.
Be official.
Yes, let's get it just right. We've known each other too long. And State Representative Christy Theobald. Also on the phones with us, we have State Representative Jessica Farr and State Representative Garnett Coleman. Good evening to both of you.
Hi, how you
Good
doing?
Evening.
First of all of you, the legislative session ended here not too long ago, and y'all are supposed to go back into a special session, what, tomorrow, the next day?
Wednesday?
Yeah. I guess the first question is, how did the legislature go this last time with a new speaker, as far as it's concerned? And anybody that wants to speak up, just do so.
I'll defer to Garnett and Jessica. They've been there longer and would look at it that way.
Well, I mean, of course, the first thing is that compared to a session with Craddock as speaker, where there was a lot of stress and acrimony, it was definitely better. Joe Strauss is a very nice guy and tried hard and I think succeeded in a lot of ways, making it a place where people could work on the issues that they thought were important. On the other hand, there are a lot of pieces of policy that I think all of us would have liked to have seen pass that just did not pass. But I think that do no harm is as good as what you pass, and for that, it was a decent session.
Jessica, what's your feelings on that?
Well, you know, a lot of bills got further than they've ever gotten before, like the bullying bill like got on the calendars. There were better committee assignments. The makeups of committees gave bills a better shot, I think. But at least, as Garnett said, it wasn't outright assault. However, I don't think until Democrats have a majority, I think, are we ever going to really be able to push the ball forward. And even then, I think when Democrats gain a majority, it will still need a couple of extra votes, handful of votes, to be able to move the GLBT agenda forward, just because, you know, the nature of our party, we're a big tent and we have a lot of folks who are very conservative.
Christy, this was your first session. What was your impression?
Oh, wow. I have to tell you, I learned a lot from Ellen Cohen and Garnett Coleman and Jessica Farrar, who sat close to me. Thank you, Jessica, for being so helpful. I will tell you this. I think what I learned the most is that it's so much harder than it looks. And I've been a staffer, but actually, once you get a bill through the House, I mean, you take a deep breath and go, wow, I got a bill through the House. But once your bill comes out of the House, it usually doesn't look much like it does when it came out of the House as it does when it comes out of the Senate. So I think you have to work just as hard over in the Senate to shepherd your bills through as you do in the House. And I think learning to work with others and reach across the aisle and find some areas that you can work together in, I think that's your relationships are the greatest thing that you can have. So I think my first session was just creating those relationships with everyone and working as hard as I could and trying to be respectful.
Okay. Ellen, you're a sophomore now, so how was it for you? You've had the taste of Craddock.
Yeah, the taste of Craddock is right. I think much of what Jessica and Garnett were saying I found to be true. In particular, for me, I had a sense of what people had been talking about pre-Craddock, and that was how people did work together. You know, how Republicans and Democrats could come together to pass bills. And when my first session was there, and I only saw what it's like to have an autocratic person determining exactly what's going to be heard, what's going to be what you can hear in a particular session, what you're going to have brought up, what bills will be they'll allow, as opposed to this speaker, who I think pretty much gave the chairpersons their freedom to hear what they wanted to, and I felt that I I felt I made a lot more friends amongst not only Democrats but Republicans as well, that were willing to listen and hopefully, you know, to vote on the issues, at least listen to my issues.
Yeah. Without the acrimony, was it easier to talk to the Republicans since there wasn't someone cracking a whip over their head?
Well, for me, there was.
Yep.
For me, yeah, no, most definitely. You know, that was the missing piece. The missing piece was being able to collaborate with your colleagues. Somebody's idea isn't good or bad based on their policy, you know, what party they're in. Always works better when we can bring ideas together and make a better idea than the two that we had individually. And that was really, you know, really felt good, to have, be able to work with all of your colleagues instead of, there being that divide.
Was there a chance to, and Jessica, I'll address this, was there a chance to get back to some of those people that for a while the Republicans you weren't able to associate with or really work together with, it was able to get back with them and have a real conversation again?
Well, remember, a lot of the moderate Republicans were targeted and defeated in Republican primaries, and the people that replaced them came in thinking that the DEM and Democrats stood for the demon, perhaps.
So, I've met a few like that.
Right. And so they have real fears. I mean, very real fears about what we believe in. But I think once they didn't have someone telling them how to think, I think it was difficult for some people. I think it was difficult for some people for the first time. Some of them had to work their bills instead of just going to talk to Papa Craddock and get their bills passed. But it forced them to also ask our viewpoints, because their bills had to get through the committee process now. And so it required the input of people on committee and people along the way who had objections. So, as Garnett said, it was a much more deliberative process this time than it has been in many years. But I think it's going to take another session or two till that comfort level is brought, because there's a psyche where they really have had a huge mistrust of us. And we're here, got elected by Tom Craddock, and so they don't recall the days of collaborating.
Were there any of the Republicans that actually seemed to get it this time? That I don't want you to tell her name, because obviously they'd be unelected if we did. But did you? Were there any of them that seemed more cooperative and sort of mellowing out
on GLBT issues?
Yes,
I think, you know, GLBT issues, in my mind, well, they're constitutional issues, and so But in the legislature, they're political issues. I really don't see anybody sticking their neck out, but I can see some individuals who wouldn't mind some things passing if it wasn't on the radar, or if there wasn't a press conference about it, or kind of like the way we used to pass things before the Tom Craddock days.
Right. Just kind of put them in a bill and nobody knows they're there. We pretend like it's not there. And all of a sudden it's passed. I think that the progress comes when everyone understands that issues that come to the floor that do nothing but cause harm to every member don't need to come to the floor. Mm-hmm. And that's at least an agreement that protects women, that protects GLBT members of our society to not have more rights taken away. I do hope for one day when we can move forward with policy in both groups, because there's been a lot of lost ground that I think we need to make back up.
I know that was there some specific bills, because I know early on when we went up there as a community and lobbied the legislature, there were some bills that we were hoping would get moved forward. Can you any of you talk about some of those bills, and did they move forward enough, or how did we do? What was our winner that probably surprised us?
Well, I got to brag on Garnett because he just had such a great GLBT legislative package. And, you know, he got the needle. The other bill that got to the on the calendar and got on the floor but didn't make it through because we ran out of time was the needle exchange bill.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a huge deal as well. A bill that was not heard that is really an important bill also deals with insurance, and it's non-discrimination in insurance. And that was a bill by Alonzo. It did not get a hearing, however, and like I said, it's a mixed bag.
And I think the bullying bill came close, but it never
very
made
close.
It. Yeah, it didn't make it.
That was Strama's bill.
Right.
There was a bill that did get through, but it wasn't seen as a GLBT bill, and I can't remember who had it. I'm going to find that out because, you know, that was one of those, nobody talked about it, so it went on through.
What was it? What did it do, Garnett?
I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
It was just one of those things that the language was written in such a way that, you know, it just... Who was that? Do you remember, Jessica? Because they said, oh, we just passed the GLBT bill. Nobody paid attention.
We need a few more like that.
Are you talking about the bill that Yvonne Gonzalez-Tourier was...
That's it. YGT's bill. That's exactly it.
Adoption, and I think it was the names on the supplemental birth certificate.
Birth certificate. That came through public health.
Right.
That is exactly right. And that dealt with children adopted by... families so that they could have the second parent on the birth certificate.
Oh, yes, I remember that. How far did that get? It got...
I think it passed.
Yeah, I think so.
What happened? Did it go anywhere in the Senate? Or can anybody remember?
Right. Yeah, if I remember right, it passed. I don't want to say 100%, but I remember it passing off the floor. I thought it was a Senate bill.
Well, does anybody know where it stood at the end of the session?
That's what he's saying. He thinks it passed.
Oh, it passed.
I think it passed.
Thinks, yeah.
And, we're going to attempt to look it up here on the internet and see if it passed.
Okay, thank you.
What's the bill number, do you know?
Anthea had a House bill version. It was 2080. So somebody's got an internet, they can look and see.
Yeah, we're going to look at that right now.
Okay.
I think one of the things was, it seemed to me, that there weren't... On issues of GLBT, we didn't have to play defense the way we had to play the previous session. Garnett and Jessica, and maybe I'm wrong. It just seems...
I think you're right.
Oh, okay. Because it just seemed that, for whatever reason, I'd like to think maybe it's because, as Garnett put it, and put it very well, you know, people just aren't as vociferous and mean-spirited, perhaps, as they have been in the past, and or maybe they're beginning to get it, or maybe they find out that they actually have a child who's gay, or, you know, their sister is, and actually they do know someone who's gay, and maybe they should just let people live their lives, but at least we didn't have to play defense.
Yeah. I want to remind everyone that just joined us, we're talking with representatives Garnett Coleman, Jessica Farrar, Ellen Cohen, and Christy Thiebold. What was for each of you, what was the real winner for you, or the high point of the last session? The most exciting part. And we'll start with Jessica.
I would say it was, a bug, a last-minute thought, and went to the Republicans and asked them, hey, on the budget, I said, how about this? Y'all pull down your anti-choice, anti-reproductive health amendments, and I'll pull down mine that make y'all don't like. Because we have, you know, you've got your several dozen, and we've got our 75 or so. So, you know, how about we just call it a day and walk away? And they had a hard time. The Right to Lifers went 8 over that. But I wasn't sure if it was a good move at the time, but I knew that the collateral damage to us could have been a lot worse because we don't have the vote, and we're at 74, and I'm chair of the Democratic Caucus, so I've got to get us to 76, so I've got to protect our members. And anyway, and it all got hung, it was working up working well until it got hung up on stem cell research and an amendment. And actually, Garnett came in and left it up. And I don't know what he said to the speaker. I just saw him go up to the podium here, and it got fixed. And everything was okay. And reproductive health was no longer a political tool.
Well, Garnett, what about you?
Oh, you know, I think the most joy was watching my colleagues enjoy the floor and enjoy being real legislators again and being able to move those issues forward and actually enjoy the legislature for its intellectual and, you know, its emotional pursuit as opposed to spending all the time fighting someone else. They spent more time fighting for their legislation and for their district. And that to me was what we were working for all along. So I'm glad that Ellen got a taste of it as opposed to what happened the year before. Ellen was on appropriations this session, for example. That was a very good thing for Houston. That was a very good thing for all of us in the whole state. So, I mean, I think those are the types of gains that occurred that weren't a particular thing, but were the change that, you know, we've spent all this time fighting for.
Well, it looks like, it looks like 2080 died in committee.
Okay. Then
I was going to say, Garnett, it did help that you were on calendars, though, on the committee, didn't it?
Yeah, that helped a lot. there were a lot of things but position, I think, gave us the ability. Even if somebody started acting a fool, you know, we could just say, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm on calendars. You know, and it kind of changed things a little bit. But, you know, really, the legislature should be a fulfilling place. You should be able to go and advocate as strong as you can, fight as strong as you may for what you believe in. But you should be able to, after that, shake hands with your opponent that disagrees with you on policy. And we saw a whole lot more of that, and I think that encourages people who are like Christy to want to come back. You know, and I think that's what's important is to have people want to come back and continue to work on behalf of their constituents.
Well, Garnett, you just reminded me of something, which was every time I got on the front mic, Warren Chisholm was on the back mic. And at the end of the day, I had so much respect for him because he was never vicious or ugly. It was just, I disagree with you. And at the end of the day, I really ended up respecting him because it was tough. I mean, he made me tougher. He made me tougher.
And I was going to say, it's refreshing to hear that because in a long gone day, I went up to Boy State and got to play legislator for a while, and that was what we were supposed to learn, that it was about cooperation and moving the best interests of the state forward.
I think that we can get back to that, and that was one of the objectives of this session, not just what bills you can pass, but can we repair the damage to the institution that had been done over the three sessions before it?
Exactly.
And to their credit, I have to tell you that Garnett and Jessica really, they really carried the water. I mean, they were really did yo person's work. You turn to them, and when Jessica talked about what she was able to do in terms of saying, okay, we'll let our stuff go if you left there, it sounds like it was just one of these things that just happened, but there was a lot of angst on the floor, and people were really nervous, and she really pulled that off. And Garnett, I mean, I can't tell you how many times he stepped in, and he was the voice of reason. I mean, I typically don't lose it very easily, but I mean, once or twice I went up to Garnett, and I mean, I thought I was going to go nuts, and you know, and he was very calm and very, you know, reassuring. And I really appreciate that. I think in terms of the question that you originally asked, you know, sort of which issues or whatever, one of the things I was really happy about, along with what both Garnett and Jessica said, was I was really happy about the referendum we're going to have in November that is going to, you know, give an opportunity for another Tier 1 university.
Yes.
And the reason I'm really happy about it is I think that the University of Houston has a great shot at it. I think they're pretty head and shoulders above whoever would be next in line. And, you know, we're the fourth largest city in the United States, and we need a Tier 1 university here. So that was one of the things I looked at the end, and I thought, that was good. That was really good.
And with the mayoral election coming up in November in Houston, that would probably help out a lot.
I think that's probably correct.
Well, okay.
No, that's a good point. I can't ever think about the things that I've been working on and whether they're good at night. I know we moved a lot of balls forward.
Well, Garnett, you worked very hard on the CHIPS program.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, that was good. That segues right into my next question. What was your biggest disappointment this last legislature?
Oh, you go for it, Garnett.
Garnett, I want to hear. I know what yours is, Garnett.
Well, actually, there were two. I mean, really, I would say three. CHIP, needle exchange, in the mezuzah bill. we had a bill that would have prohibited homeowners associations and condo associations from stopping a resident from putting mezuzah, which is a religious symbol and artifact of the Jewish religion, in the door jamb. Now, why does somebody say, why is that the biggest disappointment? Because it didn't pass. Was because that's about the fundamentals of our democracy, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and how we protect those things. And you know, at first when I had the bill, I didn't think I would get that emotional about it. But, you know, quite frankly, it says everything you want to say, have to say about our country. And the other two would, you know, still needle exchange. You're moving policy forward. And CHIP, you know, it's just because we just, you know, we have some Neanderthals in our
Well, especially since 72% of the money comes from the federal government. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
For every dollar, I think $2.67 or something comes. Yeah.
That's correct.
And didn't you also work on the eminent domain issue?
Yes. And thank you, Ellen. Those are things that just have to do with just good old common sense about protecting people's homes. And I think it's different when you have Democrats coming up and saying we're fighting eminent domain, and on the other hand, you have people who are seemingly Republicans having talking the other way, saying we want not only to protect eminent domain for institutions like the Medical Center Inc. You know, the surprise was at the end of the session they tried to put the ability for the medical center to have eminent domain over houses and commercial property in the state constitution.
Oh, that's incredible.
And I stopped it in the conference committee meeting. I walked in there and acted a fool. But that would have been HJR 14. So fortunately that happened.
Ellen, you had something you wanted to say.
No. We were just asking about, you were asking the question, why don't we let Christy go about her disappointment?
Okay, yeah. What's your biggest disappointment, Christy?
I think my biggest disappointment was that Senate Bill 472, which dealt with home foreclosure, died. I passed a bill out of the House that was pretty much incorporated to this, and then I worked really hard to get on the conference committee, and we came up with a compromise, and 20 minutes before the deadline, somebody killed that bill, and I was none too happy because pretty much that's what I spent most of my session working on.
What was the essence of the bill?
It would extend the cure date when your home would go in. The most important thing that it would do was if your home went into foreclosure, that it would give you 60 days instead of currently you have 45 days to cure your default. And we have, I think, the shortest foreclosure process in the entire country, and we basically took the date from the Attorney General. That was something that he had said in a press conference. So of course, you know, we'd like it to be longer, but at least if you can get the Republican to extend it a few days, you're going to run with it. So basically, I think that was probably and the fact that the omnibus electricity utility bill died. And just because those were the two most important issues in my district when we campaigned, they were really upset with high electric rates and then home foreclosures. I have a really diverse district, probably one of the most diverse districts in the state. And that and college tuition, nothing happened to decrease college tuition. Those probably were my biggest. Those were the things that people said to me that were the most important to them, and none of them. Matter of fact, I don't even think one one bill that would lower college tuition actually made it out of committee. So I think that was disappointing.
Wow. Jessica, what was yours?
Well, I guess I'd say that, you know, to what Garnett was saying about trying to restore the House, and it seems that we had really gotten so far along, and then at the very, very end, things went back to the old way, and rules were suspended, and a bill came out, popped out of calendar, that it shouldn't, that shouldn't have gotten there because there were enough holds that they decided not to observe the hold process.
Right.
Garnett can talk more about that, but the bill.
No, you got it.
And the problem is that a lot of bills died because the voter ID bill was set, including CHIP and including needle exchange and the bully bill and others. But so I guess that was it. We haven't come as far as I had hoped we would have come in bringing the House back and
Let's explain the voter ID bill a little bit to our audience.
Who wants to take that?
I'll take it. It would require a second form of ID, or your driver's license. Instead of just going to be able to vote with the card that you're issued, the government-issued card that the county issues you, you would also have to have your driver's license or your ID from the driver's license office, or two other forms of ID. But here's the issue. There's never been a case of fraud proven or prosecuted. And the other is that what it does, it's a very political bill. It's kind of like redistricting. It's changed the rules of the game, and it makes it harder for people that ride the bus, people that tend to vote Democratic, to vote, to actually cast their vote. And so, therefore, it potentially could have cost Democrats anywhere between 150,000 and 500,000 votes statewide. And if you add that up, that's 1,000 votes in each House district, or more. And we would never be able to win a statewide seat for a long, long time. But it's just rigging the election rules so that the other side wins. And that became more important than these other policy things that and all the work we had done. And so once that die was cast, then other members said, this matters more because in the long run, if you're not able to elect Democrats, you're not able to do much in these policy areas.
Well, additionally, it was going to disenfranchise most trans people who have difficulty under the current laws to get the proper identifications necessary to vote. We may get our voter registration, but wouldn't be able to actually go and vote.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of groups that are affected. Women who have been married and changed their names. I mean, there's so many groups, and it's a solution without a problem.
Yep. That sounds good way of putting that. Ellen, tell me.
I think Garnett particularly touched on things that I was disappointed. I was very disappointed in the CHIP bill, and I really felt that we had it going, and it was just one kind of political move that messed it up. And but I was most disappointed the way the session started off, because I thought the Senate was absolutely so without conscience in terms of suspending the two-thirds rule. So, and if you're going to suspend the required two-thirds rule in the Senate, then do it for something that's, in my opinion, really important, like educational issues, healthcare issues. And instead, they spent time discussing it and suspended it for voter ID. That really left a sour taste in my mouth from that aspect of it. And I was very disappointed in that.
Yeah. I want to remind everyone that's listening, we're speaking with state representatives Garnett Coleman, Jessica Farrar, Ellen Cohen, and Christy Thibault.
And if you have any questions, you can send it to our Twitter account, which is Queer Voices, and we're also on the web as queervoices.org.
Okay, now that we've got this special session coming up, okay, Garnett, we're going to let you do it. Would you explain it to us
quickly? We have sunset bills when we review agencies for changes in whether or not they ought to exist. If a bill is under sunset, if it fails, we have what's called a safety net bill to keep that agency from actually going away, being sunsetted. Well, the safety net bill died, and there were agencies that weren't in it, that, and the bills also didn't pass. So we have to fix the put those bills in the safety net bill. Then the other is an authorization for highway bonds that were passed by the public a while ago. And then the other is called comprehensive CDAs, Comprehensive Development Agreements, better known as the Trans-Texas Corridor in pieces, and extending those agreements in different parts of the state. And those are the three primary issues that are on the call, three issues that are on the call for the special session.
Oh, are we still building the Highway to Nowhere?
Actually, yes. Most people don't know that. We're building it in really in the pieces of the urban areas, North Texas, some of it in Harris County. The actual toll development agreements where, remember we talked about Cintra, the Spanish company that had partnered with Zachary? Well, they're the ones building many of these legs. So the things that were objectionable are still occurring. They're just occurring in pieces as opposed to one big project. And the governor wants that to continue because it's his project, but they're calling it extending the life of these comprehensive development agreements, better known as CDAs.
He won't provide health care to children, but yet he will build a highway to nowhere for his friends.
Well, it's connecting with the bridge to nowhere.
To the bridge to nowhere. Sarah Palin.
Anyway. So do you really think, Garnett, we're going to be in and out of there in 3 days?
Well, I would hope so, but you know what? These are complex and controversial issues. The bond authorization may not be, but RDAs are real big public policy based on whether or not you want to sell pieces of highway to the private sector and give them the franchise. I know there's going to be a lot of discussion about that. We can get out in 3 days if people come to agreement. But maybe people shouldn't, you know? I mean, it shouldn't be just when you get out. It should be what you do.
Well,
absolutely.
I'm rather outspoken about the road, the highway to nowhere, and have been. What is it that, is there anything else that can be brought up in the special session, or is it only limited to what the governor has?
Limited to the call based on the proclamation done by the governor.
Okay. All right. I want to follow up that we've talked about that. We now know what it is. What do y'all look at as our challenges for the next legislature? I mean, other than everybody's got to get reelected, but let's assume we do. Where do you see the next legislature?
Well, I think it depends on, and you've got four Democrats on the line, and so, you know, I think it could be an enormously successful session if we get two more seats, because then we could have a Democratic House for the first time in quite a while. So, I mean, that would be, I think that would be very exciting. And that still gives credit to Speaker Strauss, who did do a fine job. But, and then other things, some of the things that Garnett talked about, I mean, I know, Garnett, the needle exchange was really disappointing, but you remember last time I was privileged to serve with Garnett on public health last time. And, I mean, the word needle never even came in the, entered the door.
Right.
You know, at least this time it got, we're talking about a program that every other 49 states have this program, okay? We don't. Yeah. And, you know, my thinking is maybe Garnett, you know, certainly if we can get a Democratic House and, or, just move a little bit forward to the point that maybe something like a needle exchange bill would go through.
And you know, Ellen, I appreciate that, because the way I looked at it was that this was actually policy that we didn't have. I mean, we didn't even have anything near it. And it got very far out of the Senate, into the House, out of committee, and into calendars. And that says a lot. And plus, that was a bipartisan bill as well. that was even more of a demonstration of concern about people. I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jessica, what would you like to see in the next legislature that didn't happen this time that you'd like to see?
Well, I think a lot of the issues that, especially what Christy mentioned, but I don't think we get there. Well, I think we just got to pick up those two seats. I mean, there's no other way. I mean, they've proven that even with a moderate speaker, they can't get that done. And so that's what their priorities are, even under a moderate regime. So I don't know. Those are all things that we still need to work on, but I don't think we're going to get there until we pick up those two more seats.
And you know, the thing about picking up those other two seats and regaining the House, it makes the Senate have to negotiate with the House.
Yes.
And so I think these types of bills will get out just because the Senate, if they want their bills to pass and we have a Democratic House, then they're going to have to come to the table.
And have to negotiate.
Absolutely.
And talk about it and compromise.
Instead of try and slam it down your throat kind of thing.
It is... and I don't know that much about the Senate because I focus in on the House. Where are there any places where we could pick up a certain, you know, progressive thinkers could pick up in the Senate? Anybody know? Darnett?
Well, let's see. We won one last election in Tarrant County, Wendy Davis. And I believe there's some opportunities in North Texas in the Metroplex. We have a little ways to go for change in Harris County. The seat that looked the best was, of course, the one that Chris Bell ran for. You know, Senate districts are hard because it starts off at $1 million. You know, you have to have $1 million even to think about running.
Wow.
And so that makes a big difference in, you know, being in challenging anyone, quite frankly, in a Senate seat in the fall.
Well, I want to try to wrap up now, and I'm going to give everybody gets a chance. So we're going to talk with the senior member, Garnett. Anything specifically you want to say or to close out?
Well, just that I enjoy serving with my colleagues and working on behalf of the people of the state of Texas, and just going to keep doing that and working to make sure we make this a better place.
Thank you. Jessica?
Well, I'll just thank Christy and Ellen for their hard work. I mean, they just do such a great job. Christy's just incredibly tenacious, and she cares, and she's smart, and she's got a real good feel for her district. And Ellen has just, you know, she just keeps getting better. And to be on appropriations on her second as a sophomore is a really big deal. I don't know if people understand that. But she carried the water for the medical center and U of H. And she's for women's health. I mean, she's just done so much. And so, I mean, anything that anybody out there can do to help keep them. And also, we've got opportunities to pick up, to perhaps elect Kendra Yarbrough Camarena in 138. I mean, she's strong and she's got she's very connected to that district and has, you know, she's terrific. And, you know, there's just a lot of good talent out there, and I just need to support them.
Okay. Ellen?
Thanks, Jessica and Garnett, for those nice remarks. I really appreciate it. And, you know, as long as we're having kudos, the only way I could, and I suspect I'm speaking for Christy, too, although she's going to have her own chance, but the only way we can do what we did was to have the support of the people that came before us and those that are on the floor of the House now. I mean, you can't learn, you can't read about it, you can't study it. You're thrown, you know, it's literally throw yourself in the water and learn how to swim. Mm-hmm. And if it weren't for people like Jessica and Garnett, we really wouldn't have been able to do or pass or even get involved in the kinds of things we did. So, and I think we have an obligation to also provide that kind of mentoring for those, you know, people that are coming up. And I think if we do that, we're going to end up with a House that hopefully will be Democratic and also be very respectful of everyone's opinions.
All right. Christy. I'm sorry.
No.
Did I catch you off guard there?
No. I'm just sitting there thinking about everything. And I want to thank Garnett and Jessica for all their help. As a freshman, I think Ellen said it the best. You're just thrown in there. You literally go from this incredible election to being thrown in the water. And you really look around for people to model yourself after. And I can't think of any better three people than that are talking with us tonight. And, Jessica sat right next to me, and it was just a pleasure to really get to know her. I didn't know her as well as I feel like I do now. And you really do. There's just such a camaraderie, and you go through this 140 days, and at the end of the day, I feel very bonded with everyone, and I'm going to work extremely hard to come back, and I'd be amiss if I didn't mention what a great spouse I have, because he's been staying at home. He's been at home taking care of my son while I was at the legislature. So, Garnett has the same, I'm sure he's just so thankful for all the extra help he gets, too.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I want to thank our guests, State Representative Garnett Coleman, Jessica Farrar, Ellen Cohen, Christy Thiebold. I want to thank all of you. And from the community, we want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know y'all having to leave to go to the special session and spending an hour with us on Queer Voices. This is Jennifer Renee, and this is Queer Voices.
And I'm Michelle Pleasant.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 27, 2009. Ireland's government this week published a civil partnerships bill that would give same-gender couples many of the rights of marriage. Most LGBT advocates say the measure falls far short of equality, however, and dispute the government's claim that the Irish Constitution exclusively reserves civil marriage to heterosexual couples. The proposed legislation in the heavily Roman Catholic country will grant registered gay and lesbian couples legal recognition in areas such as Social Security, property rights, taxation, pensions, and inheritance. But Ireland's LGBT group Marriage Equality said the measure will force same-gender couples to accept a second-class status. Co-chair Brianna Healy called the bill deficient on so many levels, saying that it specifically fails to address the parental role and responsibilities of lesbians and gay men to their children. A same-sex couple will not be eligible to adopt a child under civil partnership, not even the child of their registered civil partner. While acknowledging that the bill fails to establish full marriage equality, Green Party Justice spokesman Ciarán Cuff said it represents real and substantial progress and provides the best means of recognizing and protecting same-sex relationships. The parties of Ireland's coalition government hold a majority of seats in Parliament, so the bill's passage may be a foregone conclusion. Some parties, however, can allow free votes on matters of conscience. The government is nevertheless promising enactment of the partnerships bill by the end of the year.
The president of Lithuania has vetoed a new law that bans materials that promote homosexuality in schools or where children could be present. Human Rights Watch said sources in the Eastern European country had confirmed that President Valdis Adamkus vetoed the Law on Protection of Minors Against the Detrimental Effect of Public Information. According to one account, the veto was not because of the homophobic nature of the law, but because Adamkus said there were no real definitions of what would be detrimental to young people. The announcement of the veto in the predominantly Roman Catholic country reportedly came hours after a protest demonstration outside the presidential palace by activists from the Lithuanian Gay League and the LGBTQ student advocacy group Tolerant Youth Association. The country's parliament overwhelmingly approved the measure in both of its two readings, but almost half of the deputies skipped the vote each time. An override requires a simple majority in the 141-seat parliament, after which a presidential signature is required within 3 days. Lawmakers will break soon for the summer recess, however, so it may be months before an override attempt. Adamkus has less than 2 weeks remaining in office, and there's speculation that he wants to leave the controversial measure on the doorstep of Lithuania's next president.
In heavily Roman Catholic Mexico, thousands marched peacefully through central Mexico City on June 20th in the capital's 31st Pride March. Some 1,500 police officers monitored the march, but no problems were reported. The parade began at midday at the Monument of the Angel of Independence and ended at the Plaza de la Constitución later in the afternoon. The marchers' political demands included improvements in security, health care, and sexual education, and anti-bias protections to reduce the harassment they continue to face in Mexico. In a survey released this week, 88% of LGBT respondents said they'd experienced discrimination, and many reported being victims of homophobic violence. The poll was conducted by several organizations, including the National Autonomous University of Mexico and the Latin American Center for Sexuality and Human Rights.
Not to be outdone, Tijuana's June 20th Pride Parade, the city's 14th, was nearly three times bigger and twice as long as in any other year. Gay journalist Rex Walkner said that the turnout was all the more amazing because the city has been hit in the past year by a serious crime wave as drug cartels and dealers battle for dominance. Unlike previous years, few gays and lesbians cross the border from Southern California, especially from San Diego, which is just 15 miles to the north, because of the violence. But at least 1,000 people marched or rode in the parade, which stretched along seven blocks of Avenida Revolucion, the main drag of the city of 2 million people. More than 10,000 people jammed the sidewalks to watch the event. Spectators generally cheered the parade and smiled broadly. A single protester with a handheld PA system stationed at the parade lineup location repeatedly shouted, "The price of sin is death," according to the Bible. According to Walkner, everyone ignored him.
We're happy to report that there was no violence at this year's Pride March in Jerusalem, the spiritual home of Jews, Muslims, and Christians. Amid a heavy police presence, thousands of Israelis gathered on June 25th for the city's 8th Pride celebration, which most leaders of the three religious faiths routinely oppose. More than 1,500 police were on the streets to protect the estimated 4,000 marchers who gathered in West Jerusalem's central Bell Park and traveled up the closed-off King David Street to the city's Independence Park for an evening rally. Unlike the pulsating parade in Israel's secular seaside capital of Tel Aviv, which drew tens of thousands 2 weeks ago, the parade in Jerusalem was far more restrained. Few participants wore flamboyant costumes, and Deutsche Presseagentur reported that except for three men discreetly dressed as women, there were no outrageous drag queens. Yearly protests against the parade in the city mushroomed in 2006 when ultra-Orthodox yeshiva students took to the streets for nine consecutive nights, burning garbage containers and throwing stones and bottles at the police. Religious conservatives, however, decided to discourage vocal public protests to avoid giving the event additional publicity, although a group of ultra-Orthodox Jews held a small demonstration of mourning in another part of the city.
U.S. President Barack Obama is scheduled to hold a reception on June 29th at the White House to mark the 40th anniversary of New York City's Stonewall Riots, the event in June 1969 that sparked the modern-day push for LGBT equality. The guest list reportedly includes prominent activists and leaders of advocacy groups around the country. While the White House had not released their names, it may be notable that gay U.S. fighter pilot Lieutenant Colonel Victor Fehrenbach, who's fighting his high-profile discharge under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, told TV's Rachel Maddow show that he had been invited. The president was expected to make remarks at the reception, but it's not certain how extensive they might be. We'll follow up on this story next time. This was week number three in Obama's Queer Chronicles, as the president continued damage control over a hugely offensive Justice Department brief in early June, supporting the Equality Banning Defense of Marriage Act in a federal lawsuit. Candidate Obama had repeatedly promised to seek its repeal. There had already been rumblings of discontent in the president's LGBT constituency over his failure to take concrete steps against that odious measure and to overturn Don't Ask, Don't Tell, another campaign promise. We'll have more on the ongoing Obama drama later in this program.
And finally, ugly homophobia can sometimes actually pay. According to a report in the New York Daily News, the predominantly gay congregation Beth Simcha Torah was one of the synagogues picketed in New York City this week by the anti-Semitic and anti-gay Westboro Baptist Church. The Kansas cult, headed by fanatic Fred Phelps, is notorious for picketing the funerals of gay men, most notably gay-bashed Wyoming student Matthew Shepard. More recently, they've picketed the funerals of soldiers killed in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars because Phelps claims their deaths are punishment for the acceptance of homosexuality in the U.S. His group of mostly family members held signs outside the West Village Synagogue this week saying, "Jews stole the land," and the ever-reliable "God hates fags." Congregation Beth Simcha Torah asked supporters to pledge $1 for every minute that the six protesters stood near the temple holding those signs and yelling insults. Synagogue leaders said the money raised would help the congregation, which currently uses rented space, to find a permanent home. The appeal raised $10,000 in 50 minutes.
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 27, 2009. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way, I'm Lee Moore.
And I'm Michelle Pleasant.
Coming up next on Queer Voices, a discussion of gay pride.
We're supposed to wear costumes to the KPFT auction. It's a wear that funky costume kind of thing. Fabulous prizes will be awarded to the most awesome, weird, provocative, strange, ecstatic, unemployed, disastrous moment collage of creativity ever put on the KPFT listener body. If decorating your body isn't enough, you could buy a table and decorate it too. Place elephants, giraffes, gorillas, monkeys, lions, cats, cardboard cutouts, posers, fake pirates, runaway radios, ex-spouses, sod, trees, airplanes, boats, trains, surgeons, giant squids, and useless junk on your table. Eat around it, drink around it, share what it means with you. It may be therapeutic, but probably not. More likely just embarrassing. But if you take the grand prize home, who cares?
Uh-huh.
Saturday evening, July 18th, KPFTauction.org. Be there. KPFT, kicking intolerant butt for over 30 years.
You're listening to KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Well, we all survived Pride.
Yes.
And
we survived the heat.
Right. Woo. I mean, you know, I love hot weather, but even this is getting to me.
This was more than hot. This
yes.
Was,
well, we've had like a week's worth of over 100 degrees. Although, once the parade started, it wasn't quite as bad, at least for me walking.
It was kind of, you know, cooled down a little bit.
Yes.
Of course, it was cooled down from like 104.
Well,
like 94.
Well, still, the heat index was, you know, close to 100 degrees at a parade time.
You know, and normally it rains right before the parade.
Yes.
The last couple of years, so it didn't do that this year.
Oh, if it had rained before the parade this year, everybody would be falling out because that humidity would have spiked up at that temperature. We'd all been breathing heavily. And not for the reason you're thinking, Brian.
No. Well, we're kind of used to this dry heat now. You know, they say Houston has kind of a humid.
Yes.
Humid. Well, now we have a dry heat here.
Well, hopefully, while we've been doing this show, it rained out there. In some parts
there's
of the
some,
metro, yeah.
Yeah, there's some, like, sound coming from the sky and, like, liquid. I've heard stories about this before.
Yes, and there was lightning, and lots of lightning on the way to the studio this evening. As I was driving down 59 looking to the sort of northeast. Whew!
Do we have any indication of how big the crowd was this year?
Well, the police do not give any estimates because they always get blamed for being too small or too big. I bumped into the gentleman from Silver Eagle, who's been around forever, and he says he thought the crowds were just as big. I heard people say, well, they thought the crowds were a lot younger and drunker, and I don't know how true that was, because I'm not usually paying attention to that, although it did seem like there was a lot of young people, which is great. The parade was definitely shorter because they had on about 90 units where we've had upwards of 125, 135. Of course, some of them were combined because most of the politicians were in one unit. Elected officials, I should say.
And I think if you kind of consolidate the units, that kind of makes for a more interesting parade because it kind of drags on.
Well, it can if it's not.
There's like a lot of breaks.
If the timing isn't done, you have a lot of these long breaks. It gets rather.
You're like, is that it?
You mean, is it over yet? Then it's not over yet. And plus the fact that it gives, you know, the
people watching it more time to drink. And
yes.
Get a little more rowdy, and that you isn't know, always a good
people
thing.
People were setting up at 8 a.m. on Saturday morning.
Yes. Well, that's like this poor guy that got trampled by the horse.
Well, they had their truck set up, and then their coolers, and they were right on, like, Westheimer at Montrose, and I'm like...
About noon.
It was like before noon.
And there was only 5 professional floats this year.
That was disappointing.
Yeah, it was rather disappointing. I know we're dealing with the economy. What else was also very disappointing was there was much less press coverage, I think.
I noticed that, too.
Today, I didn't see anything in the Sunday Chronicle. I could have missed it. About the Pride Parade, but I don't necessarily expect it in the Sunday Chronicle because it's going to press when we're still, you know, in the parade route. Today, there was an article from San Antonio, but not about Houston.
Hmm. Well, I did see in the Sunday paper there were 2 small articles, and I mean small, like just a paragraph talking about it, which must have meant that they wrote it prior to the actual publishing of the paper, just so there would be something
right,
in there.
Or just before the parade started. And then I watched Channel 2's 10 p.m. news, and there was nothing on it. Channel 13 basically had B-roll, meaning they just had some pictures of it, but not a live reporter out there. I didn't watch the other stations yet. I still have it on tape.
And I think I mentioned that Channel 11, the young lady who was reporting the morning, Saturday morning news, talked about it twice in 2 different segments.
So Channel 11 is our favorite now?
I guess. Hey, she's my favorite.
Oh, I see.
Oh, well. I don't know her name, but I'll tell you.
In reality, all the TV stations here are cutting back on live coverage. They'd rather run national stuff than do local news. So it's tougher to get the word out about things like that.
So, Jack, in your opinion, as a seasoned Pride official and organizer, what did you see good about this year, and what did you see?
Well, since I was in the parade, I couldn't see it all. It was great to see some of the corporations that were in there because that, you know, showing support for Pride, you know, BP and Continental Airlines and some of the other ones. It started on time. I knew that. It started on time. That's always important to me. Being a nighttime parade, it sort of has to start on time because you have to get it ended earlier because the parade was shorter. But, and the festival was probably smaller. Now, we're just talking about those things. The fact that they pulled it off is still incredible because of the economy and
the heat.
That we had. That the history tent was there,
which was an oasis. If you went into it, it was just nice air conditioning.
Yes. I was sitting down talking to Judy Reeves,
One of your favorite friends,
about the it's great to see that history tent because you see things that you don't, you know, especially younger people don't know about.
And it was good to see the Houston Arch, the digitization project.
Yes.
Talking about their efforts and endeavors to digitize all of our history.
I want to address something we were talking about, it being a lot more young people or appeared to be more young people. I think in a way that's great. You know, this was...
maybe the next generation.
The next generation needs to come out. Of course, being a little bit overzealous in their libations may be a problem, but, you know, it was always that way.
Yeah.
But the fact that there are a lot more young people, it's a lot more comfortable for them to come out, and this is for them. You know, many of us who have been around a long time and have been to many prides in the early days, it was important that we had some more young people. I think it's been great the fact that we see families with their small children coming, which means that it's cleaned up its image, and, you know, it's in a good way, in a bad way, we become mainstream.
Is that good or bad?
Well, I think only history will tell.
Right.
But the main thing is, it still is a lot of fun. People enjoy themselves. It's the nicest parade, you know, for our community anywhere. And it is the, what is it, I think the only nighttime parade?
No, we were the first nighttime Pride Parade in the Northern Hemisphere. There are other cities that have done it. I'm not sure who's still continuing to do it. But there are other cities in this country that I believe that are doing it.
One of the things I was interested and amazed by was the neighborhood cooperation. There's a lot of, you know, they're parking all the floats in the neighborhoods around Westheimer. And there's just like this sea of people working on the yard, and you know they're on the yard assembling the float the day of the parade.
Oh yes,
and you know, and all those back streets, and it's just amazing that all that cooperation happens.
Oh yeah,
well it's really interesting that. It's interesting how Pride started. I mean, 40 years ago, Stonewall happened, and there was actually an interesting piece on Headline News, which I really can't stand anymore. But they had a really interesting piece about, and in fact, Obama had a reception for some of the Stonewall veterans of the day. Unfortunately, he didn't make any announcements about extending rights to us all. But the fact that, you know, that we had the riots, but then we started commemorating them the following year.
Yes.
And that this has grown. And if you want to look at something, go to interpride.org, and they probably have the most comprehensive calendar of Pride events around the world. They don't all happen in June, but a lot of them do happen in June. And, you know, anywhere from picnics to seminars to parades. You know, Houston ranks up there, but there are bigger ones in New York and San Francisco and in Los Angeles, and some other cities around the world. Sydney, Australia, they were the original nighttime parade that we learned a lot on. And, but, you know, it is easy to criticize any organization. It's better to get involved in that organization, help make it better.
Absolutely.
Well, and they put it together that, you know, for whether it's good, bad, indifferent, is it better than last year, better than years past? The important thing is that we had the Pride Parade just as it's been for so many years, and especially as far back as I can remember coming out and knowing that there was a place that I could go and have a good time, you know, openly. Here in Houston, and that our one special evening, special day and evening was the parade.
I think we should recognize the Pride president, Brad Odom, who last year took an organization that was in debt and turned it around in a year, and then had a surplus this year and pulled off another excellent event.
A turmoil. It was in turmoil, and
yeah, there was talk of a community intervention, save Pride last year, and it. It turned around, and then this year was even better.
Absolutely.
And I think they added the health and wellness tent this year that they did a separate fundraiser for,
mm-hmm.
and I think that was very successful in kind of injecting a different stream of revenue into the festival.
Well, I think the festival itself is redefining itself. It has its part and parts, the history tent, mm-hmm. the health. But it has to redefine itself so that we, you know, we as a community, what is it we're really going to support? And I hopefully they'll take a good look at that and find out how it can be made better for next year.
And I like the businesses that are kind of, approaching the GLBT community, and they're there at the festival in the middle of the hot day, and they're, you know, advertising, and, you know, I would be more likely to support those businesses.
Oh, yes. And there's a number like that. Also, the organizations that were there, doing what they do, mm-hmm. you know, as far as voter IDing and voter registration for our community. Because, again, this is when our community gathers, and a lot of these people come from the far-flung area around Houston who come into town who may be still in the closet back home. You know, they get the necessary information to either be part of the ID base or, you know, get voter registration. They registered to vote. They may not be voting.
Absolutely. I had some friends in from College Station, and they were like, oh, my God, this is huge. I'm like, yeah, it's like a little city.
Oh, that's right. You're an Aggie, aren't you?
I am. And I was, you know, they call it Closet Station for a reason. And, you know, the friends came in and, like, you know, to see the openness and the acceptance of the city. And, you know, there's all these police officers that are just, you know, wearing beads and supporting the parade, I think.
And that's a really interesting thing because how that has changed. I mean, in fact, there was a group of police officers in the parade.
Yes.
The fire department was in the parade.
I noticed some of the firemen, yes.
And the mayor, of course, was in the parade.
Yes.
And there was a float there with the city council people. And then we had some of the people who are running for other office, like Peter Brown running for mayor, and East Parker running for mayor, and a few others. And that's a really incredible statement because You know, Mayor White's only the second mayor that has been in the parade.
That's amazing. Yeah, I know.
So we have come a long way, but we still got a long ways to go. And that there still are a lot of organizations in the community that, you know, the Montrose Counseling Center, Legacy, the AIDS Foundation, that they continue to be supportive of the parade. And,
yeah.
And some of the other groups, like the Bunnies.
HRC.
The Rhesus, mm-hmm. which is the... They're the
organization that raises money for local or community organizations, HIV AIDS and what have you. I know the Bayou City Boys Club did a walking unit. I was happy to ride on the KPFT float, and we had our microphones and we were talking about our shows.
You and Jimmy Carper of After Hours.
Yes.
Another show that y'all, if you're up late, or should I say early Sunday morning?
We'll call it late.
Late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, which he comes on at 2, is it?
No.
Midnight.
He comes on at midnight. Midnight to 4 now.
Midnight to 4. So if you're up at that time and want to listen to another show, an interesting GLBT show, you should get on there.
It's more of an irreverent look at the GLBT.
Irreverent?
Yes.
Yes, that's irreverent.
Yes,
not reverent.
They call our show kind of the Nightline, where we talk about issues and kind of topics, and they're more of the Colbert Show, kind of more.
Well, you look like Ted Koppel.
Oh, my God. No, I get Tom Hanks all the time. That's what I get.
Tom Hanks? Yeah. Oh, please. Never mind.
So
we're all tens on the radio.
Exactly. But Jack and I were on the show last Saturday.
Yes, I heard that. And how did it go?
It went really well. I talked a lot. Apparently.
You did? Well,
yes.
Took over the show.
I do want to also mention that Rainbow the Clown was in the parade. He marched with KPFT.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you know, Rainbow used to be at sort of like the Santa Claus at the end. But he just joined in there, as Ray usually joins in with some group or the other every year. And he usually has cameras following him around. It's a real tradition to watch the parade and see what was going on and how the community sort of... This is sort of like our year-end event, and you know, now we start another year of moving forward. You know, past the 40th anniversary of Stonewall. I guess I sort of thought that would take a bigger play around the country, and I just haven't quite seen that. But there are still some people around from Stonewall that have, you know, witnessed all these changes, and, you know, certainly Jennifer and I have seen a lot of these changes over the years. You know, we still got a long ways to go, though.
Yep, absolutely.
Didn't Colbert do a little something on it?
He did a great thing on Thursday, and you can look it up at comedycentral.com of talking about Stonewall and having one of the Stonewall veterans on. Really good show. And the gentleman was talking about, well, what it was like back then, and, you know, why haven't we seen more progress in the sense that we all worked so hard to get Obama elected and get the Republicans out of the White House, yet we haven't seen any major changes yet. Don't ask, don't tell, non-discrimination employment. You know, marriage thing is a great thing, but we still got some building blocks. And, you know, my dear friend Rainbow, who was at last week's Harris County brown paper bag lunch event that happened in the evening, there was sort of a discussion by Sue Lovell, Ray Hill, and Chris Banks, the president of the Houston GLBT Political Caucus, and Steve Kirkland moderated it, and there was talk about, you know, what the history like, where we're going. And it was interesting that, you know, it sort of came around, well, we all worked very hard to get this president elected, and nothing's come of it yet. And then Rainbow, a little bit later, says, you know, I'd let some of these things slide if we can get the health care fixed. Because so many, and especially a lot of gay men who are HIV positive, have a real tough time trying to get insurance.
Oh, yeah. Well, you trans people
have a tough time, too. I'm sorry. Let me finish this. Or any type of a medical condition.
Oh, yes. Well, and that's too. It's the existing. If you have an existing condition, it's almost impossible to get insurance, and it can be something simple. And insurance, health insurance companies that we have today, unless you're in part of some big plan, if you're trying to get health insurance as an individual, they're only taking the young and the healthy.
And most of them don't take it.
That's right.
Because they're young and healthy.
I mean, if you aren't absolutely healthy and not need the insurance, you don't get it.
I was watching the movie Sicko this morning. Michael Moore's, and it so infuriates me.
And that movie's about people who have insurance.
Well, and it also talks about the healthcare, the HMO's strategy to eliminate people, to find out conditions if you didn't declare a certain condition that you didn't disclose that you're now ineligible for insurance, they can deny you.
And that's one of the things.
Such a
frustrating. That's part of it. They're designed to...
To not pay out.
Well, they're designed to make a profit.
Make a profit.
And make a profit on the backs of the individual.
They call a payout to a claim a medical loss.
A medical loss.
Yes. Your surgery is a loss to them.
Well, and I've probably had a few losses, but I try to keep up with that, and it seems like when I had insurance, mind you, that I ended up paying a whole lot more than they ever paid for me. But yet I can't get insurance anymore.
You know, if we can fix the healthcare.
Haven't been able to have insurance in over 10 years.
If we could fix healthcare, that would be a major milestone for this president.
Well, the best thing you can do is stay healthy, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because unless you're going to have to go to the emergency rooms. And that's a shame, the waste of resources on emergency rooms simply because someone has, a cold or
a fever.
Flu.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially children. Parents who have children, going back to the CHIPS program, who have children that get sick, they want to take care of their kids. Mm-hmm. And the only place they can go is to the hospital district. But we've got a lot of work to do. Pride is our day to shine every year as
a
community.
Do you think that we still need pride? Is it important? Is it relevant to today's culture? Are we out enough?
I don't know what I would do on the fourth Saturday of in June.
But does it do the same? Does it serve the same purpose that it used to?
The community is different. There's no two ways about it. It's different. It seems to be more of a party than it is a revolutionary type of empowerment to us all. For example, the Pride Idol was in front of the Grand Marshals in the parade.
Yes, I heard that.
Well, and I think that to answer your question, is this important? Yes. It's probably more important now than it might have been a few years ago because the generations are changing.
I think that, yeah.
And
we saw that, I think.
There needs to be a renewal of understanding.
Passing of the torch.
Passing of the torch, but also the young ones need to understand what it was all about.
Well, and
there's some people that don't even know what... They've heard of Stonewall, but they don't know what it was about. These are the young people.
I brought this up on Saturday night, Sunday morning, that the caucus blog right now, there's a posting by one of the officers saying that, we're not denied housing or we don't get discriminated at work. And that's not true.
Not true.
Excuse me. I'm sitting, actually. Both of those things occurred to me. I lost the house I was in.
Are you kidding?
Oh, yeah. I was renting a piece of property, and I came out, and I was out on the street. And my job, the same thing. So
there's no protection.
There are no protections. Anybody that believes that there's protection in housing,
deluded.
Public accommodations, because there are several bars in town. I won't name any here tonight, that still discriminate against trans people and gay people.
Speaking of
bars,
they
just don't want them in there.
Did you hear about this incident in Fort Worth that happened on Saturday?
No, what's that?
There was a raid in a bar in Fort Worth on Saturday night, the anniversary of Stonewall, and it's kind of a big...
Was it a gay bar?
It was a gay bar.
The police raided it?
The police raided it.
You don't ever hear about that anymore.
I didn't hear, I heard about it.
I saw some headlines, but I didn't get the whole story, and maybe that's something we can cover next week.
Yeah, that
absolutely.
You know,
maybe we can. That would be
your
good.
This is your breaking gay GLBT news that happened over the weekend, and we will research and come back to you.
Bring it back to you. We'll try to get some particulars on that and report it next Monday.
Yes.
Okay, and you're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you.
Hi there. I'm KPFT Program Director Ernesto Aguilar. KPFT is taking a brief break from our regular programming this moment to remind you about KPFT and Pacifica's board elections happening this year. Board elections are incredibly important. Good governance helps on a number of different levels, from fundraising to outreach and much more. We're taking this break from our regular programming to encourage you to vote in these elections later this year and to consider becoming a candidate for our local station board. The nominations period is right now and closes July 15th, so your opportunity to be a candidate for our local station board is now, but is ending very soon. Please listen in for these next few minutes as we educate you about the elections, the voting process, the nominations process, and much, much more. Along the way, we'll give out contact information for our local election supervisor, so you may want to get a pen and be ready to write down a little bit of information. However, if you don't have a writing instrument handy, you can find all this information at kpft.org. You can also find this information at pacificafoundation.org. Your participation in this election makes a big difference. We do require a quorum of voters for the elections to be certified. Elections are an expensive business, and we don't want money to go out the window, so we want you to please vote. We also want you to run, so please stay tuned and learn a little bit more about these elections and how to participate. Again, I'm Ernesto Aguilar, KPFT's Program Director, thanking you for your support of KPFT Houston. Please stay tuned and learn a little bit more about how you can be involved in this year's KPFT elections.
Greetings to all people listening to these airwaves. I'm Mo, here with Allison, to encourage you to participate in the local station board elections as a candidate, voter, or by helping with community outreach efforts.
Wait. I didn't know we were in the middle of an election. I mean, we just had a major breakthrough.
This is an election for KPFT's local station board. KPFT is a part of Pacifica Radio, America's oldest independent media network, which is also the last radio network with a democratically elected board. The KPFT station board has the power to make or break the station as we know it.
So what do you mean by make or break? I mean, if I decided to run, you mean I will actually have a say? Or is it just a title that will look good on my resume?
Well, yeah, the local station board has a lot of power, as well as responsibilities. Furthermore, I think that by participating in the board, you will not only enrich your resume, but you will enrich your life.
So?
Okay, you're very impatient. I'm getting to it, okay?
Yeah. But, you know, I've got a lot of things to do, so keep it snappy.
The primary teeth that the local station board has are controlling the budget, and we all know money talks. The local station board delegates must review and approve the station's budget. In approving funding for the stations, LSB is responsible for ensuring that the programming pushes forward the Pacifica mission to promote peace and justice through communication between all races, nationalities, and cultures. The local station board works with management to ensure that programs represent the needs of listeners and communities served by the station.
How does the LSB find out what the people need? I mean, I know what I mean, and I think I may have a fairly good idea about what others in my community need. But I would imagine you need to have a more formal way, some method to find this out.
Yeah, you're exactly right. A main responsibility is to reach out to underrepresented communities to help serve people of all ages, ethnicities, social class, sexual orientations, and genders. You should really get involved. If you want to make a change and get your voice heard, now is your chance.
Wow. If I were to run and win, looks like I could help make some real changes, or at least start the process.
I'm happy you're inspired.
So what are the requirements to run as a candidate?
You need to be a current member of KPFT by July 14th, either by renewing your membership or becoming a new member. If you haven't done this yet, you will need to make a minimum annual donation of $25 or perform 3 hours of volunteer work for KPFT. You can become a member by calling the station or visiting kpft.org and making a donation.
And?
You need to complete the candidate nomination package posted on Pacifica's website at www.pacifica.org or get a hard copy from your local election supervisor.
So, when is this nomination package thingy due, and what does it consist of?
All of your written materials must be returned before midnight, July 15th, in order to qualify as a listener candidate. These materials include 15 valid signatures of people you know are current members of your station.
I don't know if I even know 15 people in this entire world.
What?
Just kidding.
Where was I? Oh, here. In addition to the petition, you must complete a 500-word essay about the reasons why you want to run, and you have to answer a list of questions about your qualifications for the local station board.
Okay.
If you really want to get elected, the sooner your nomination papers are received and verified, the sooner your information can be posted on the station's website and therefore viewed by all those interested in voting. Speaking of which, we strongly encourage all of you out there listening to participate as voters. As a voter, you also have to be a member, so renew your membership or become a new member before July 14th so you can participate.
Hey, hey, hey. You know I'm still here. So once I finish this nomination package thingy and get all the people in the world I know to sign my petition, what's next?
What's next? Then the campaign begins. Campaigning runs from July 15th till the end of October.
Hold on. I've never been a candidate. Well, I did try to. Never mind. Explain, please. If I'm a candidate, where do I campaign?
The local election supervisor has to ensure that you, as a listener candidate, will have several on-air and in-person opportunities to make your opinions known to the voting public and to debate with the other listener candidates during the election period.
Hmm.
By the way, everyone who's listening, you can support the democratic process by helping organize these community forum events. Please contact your local election supervisor if you want to get involved in any way. It could be as simple as an announcement at an already ongoing event or a full-fledged forum accompanied by music and food. Every little bit helps.
Music and food? That sounds good. I'm kind of hungry.
Sorry, Allison. I didn't bring any food. Do you have any more questions for me?
Well, what's after the campaign period?
Well, then there's the voting period. It runs from August 29th through midnight October 14th. The voters will have a chance to choose at least one person who will represent them and their interests on the board. Through the use of the single transferable voting method, voters will all be given an opportunity for proportional representation.
What's single transferable vote? I mean, vote. Never heard of it.
I wouldn't have expected you to have. It's not the system we use in our two-party, quote-unquote, democracy. Let me see if I can explain this simply. The single transferable vote, or STV, is a system of preferential voting designed to minimize wasted votes and provide proportional representation. Practically speaking, we have candidates and we rank them in order of preference.
What? Do I have to rank all nine, or just the few that I know?
Let me explain more clearly. You could just put your first choice, but if your first doesn't win, your vote is lost. With this system of voting, you can rank your first, second, and third choices. Once the first choice is removed from the ballot, your vote counts for your second choice. This way, there's a greater chance that your vote will count in the end. Isn't it better that your second choice be represented than not being represented at all?
It would appear so. I'm still a bit fuzzy on the mathematics of it all. So after we do the single transferable vote, then what happens?
The ballots are counted. The election has to be certified by the National Election Supervisor by November 15th. If there are challenges to the election, they have to be addressed prior to the 15th. The election process is overseen by each station's local election supervisor and by the National Election Supervisor, Les Radke. With the cooperation of management, election supervisors, staff, and listeners, we are expecting a broad, transparent election. I hope that you decide to run, Allison.
Okie dokie, I'll think about it. This is a chance to get my voice heard and represent my community. It beats yelling into oblivion about all the things I wish I could change. A noble sauce. Oops, I mean cause. Food is on the brain, since you mentioned.
Well, then let me untie your chains and free you from the bonds of the station network cell so you can get a bite to eat. But before you leave, don't forget to run. If you are elected, the new board meets in December and begins their new term of office.
Okay, now I really gotta run for a bite. See ya.
Thank you. So in closing, I want to encourage all those who are listening to participate in this election. You can really play a role in determining the future of KPFT and the Pacifica Network. It's an opportunity to participate in a real democratic process. Please spread the word about the election to others, listeners, and members. There will be multiple community forums, so please keep an ear open for the dates and times of these important events. People with disabilities or other special needs will be able to obtain voting materials and nomination packages by calling 713-526-4000, extension 303, or writing to election@kpft.org. Check out pacifica.org for more information. Many thanks for supporting KPFT and Pacifica's mission to promote peace and social justice.
Fox News.
Hello, I'm someone with a passion to bring factual information to the people who need it.
Go away, we're busy doing propaganda.
CNN.
Hello, I understand numbers. I want to help your organization get on sound financial ground and leap into the future.
No positive thinkers need apply.
KPRC.
Hi, I'm a listener and I want to help make decisions.
A listener? Hey, there's a listener out here, guys. Can you believe it?
Hey, I want to help.
Welcome, come right in. We need you.
Hi, I'm Melanie White, asking you to become a candidate in our local station board election. Confirm or renew your membership and complete the candidate nomination package posted on Pacifica's website before July 15th. Call Ann Shaw at 713-526-4000, extension 303, or email to election@kpft.org for voting information and more. Again, that's local election supervisor Ann Shaw at 713-526-4000, extension 303, or email election@kpft.org.
This is not a fundraising plea. It's an alert from the Pacifica Radio Network to you, KPFT listeners. This year marks the 60th anniversary of the Pacifica Foundation, a beacon of listener-supported, non-commercial, free media since 1949 and 1970 here in Houston.
There will be separate but parallel elections for both listener and staff delegates to the Pacifica Foundation's five local station boards.
You can help keep KPFT Pacifica Radio alive and get your voice heard by running for your KPFT station board and voting for the listener candidates this fall.
Members of the local station board shape the future of KPFT and are elected to bring diverse grassroots voices from the community into the dialogue between the local community and the station.
Nominations are now open for the 2009 KPFT local station board election.
Complete election information is available on our website at kpft.org.
And contact the KPFT election supervisor to receive a nomination package by writing an email to election@kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 303. That's 526-4000, extension 303. July 15th is the deadline for nominations to the KPFT local station board. How can you keep Pacifica alive? With all its diverse truth and insanity, run for the KPFT local station board and bring in good governance. Push forward the Pacifica mission to promote peace and justice through communication between all races, nationalities, and cultures. You can become active in the elections by calling KPFT election supervisor Ann Shaw at 713-526-4000, extension 303, or send her an email at election@kpft.org.
There are three ways to qualify to vote and run. Listener candidates can contribute at least $25 to a foundation radio station. Volunteers can complete 30 or more verifiable volunteer hours at a foundation radio station. Or a special waiver can be requested from the local station board.
In order to participate, you just need to be a current member of the station.
Complete election information is available on our website at kpft.org.
And contact the KPFT local election supervisor to receive a nomination packet by writing an email, election@kpft.org, or calling 713-526-4000, extension 303.
Nomination for the board are open now and will continue until July 15th. After the nomination process is complete, we'll post candidate data online and host on-air candidate forums and throw a few Meet the Candidate events around the community. Qualified voters will receive their ballots in the mail starting August 29th. Completed ballots will be due by October 15th.
Remember, July 15th is the deadline for nominations. This is your Radio for Peace, listener-sponsored, commercial-free, KPFT Houston.
Now back to Queer Voices, where we pick the show up again with This Way Out.
The June 1969 uprising that sparked the modern-day queer liberation movement has again been commemorated in many cities around the world. The 40th anniversary of New York City's Stonewall riots took on additional significance during the month's traditional pride observances in the United States, and for none more so than President Barack Obama. First, his Justice Department filed an offensively worded defense of the Equality-Denying Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, in a federal lawsuit. Obama has seemingly been in damage control ever since. The New York Times reported this week that the president's lawyers are drafting guidelines that, for the first time, would bar discrimination against federal employees based on gender identity. The move would expand on Obama's June 17th memorandum to provide some benefits to gay and lesbian government workers, though not the most important one, spousal health care, which is outlawed under DOMA. But Obama's Attorney General Eric Holder urged a Senate committee this week to advance the Matthew Shepard Act, which would add sexual orientation and gender identity to existing federal hate crime laws. The measure allows for enhanced penalties for bias-motivated physical attacks and also includes federal assistance to local agencies in the investigation and prosecution of hate crimes. Its passage was among candidate Obama's campaign promises, but it's the only one that substantially advanced beyond his words. The House passed the bill in April by a comfortable margin, but approval in the Senate may be more difficult. Free Speech Radio news reporter Jess Burns has more.
U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder says new hate crimes legislation is necessary. Today he spoke before the Senate Judiciary Committee to defend the Matthew Shepard Hate Crimes Prevention Act, which extends protections based on sexual orientation, gender identity, and disability status.
There's no question that with regard to the vast majority of these crimes, they would be handled by the state. But for those cases that protect, that pose particular problems or expose an inability or unwillingness for the states to prosecute them, we think that there is the demonstrated need for the federal government to become involved.
But Republican Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama and many of his fellow party members don't like the idea of what they refer to as special protections.
There are lots of other groups, people, decent people, that might need additional federal protection if the federal government had all the money in the world and all the time to investigate this.
Democrats have been trying to pass updated hate crimes legislation for years. New York Senator Charles Schumer.
It's hard for me to understand how anybody can oppose that. If we vote down this legislation, in a certain sense, we are saying it is okay to physically harm people who you don't like because of who they are.
I'm Jess Burns for Free Speech Radio News.
Meanwhile, as they entered the 10th annual LGBT Leadership Council fundraiser for the Democratic National Committee in Washington, D.C. on June 25th, gay and lesbian high rollers were confronted by about 40 queer protesters. They carried signs that read, "Gay Uncle Toms," and condemning the 265 discharges under Don't Ask, Don't Tell since Obama took office. Some notable LGBT leaders, including the entire board of the National Stonewall Democrats, had announced that they'd refuse to attend the gala because of the offensive DOMA brief and the president's failure to take any action against the U.S. military ban. Despite the controversy, about 180 people showed up, paying from $1,000 to more than $30,000 a plate. Donors heard Vice President Joe Biden acknowledge LGBT discontent, but he assured them of Obama's commitment to equal rights. A Democratic Party source told The Advocate that the event raked in nearly $1 million, up from about $750,000 last year. The Washington, D.C.-based Center for American Progress issued a report this week called Ending Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Practical Steps to Repeal the Ban on Openly Gay Men and Women in the U.S. Military. One of its authors and a senior fellow at the center, Lawrence J. Korb, served as an assistant secretary of defense under Ronald Reagan and is a longtime critic of the ban. He was on active duty for 4 years as a naval flight officer and retired from the Naval Reserve with the rank of captain. Korb discussed their findings during a media teleconference.
The report we put out today basically says that repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell is not simply a gay rights issue. It's a matter of military readiness. And what we've done is analyzed all of the reports, the data, and basically come up with the conclusion that the policy just is not does not make sense and, in fact, is undermining our military readiness. We went back and looked, and there have been studies done for the past 50 years, starting in 1957 with the Crittenden Report up till the 2008 RAND study, basically, that showed it does not undermine readiness or unit cohesion. You also have the studies of the 24 other militaries, major militaries. A lot of them are allies that fight with us in Iraq and Afghanistan that allow openly gay men and women to serve, and they've had no problems.
Korb cited government accounting office figures about the policy's economic impact.
It's costly. We're spending a lot of money. Now, the GAO says every time you put out someone, and we put out about 13,000 people since 1993 and over 30,000 since President Carter put the first ban on gays in the military, they say it's at least $10,000 a person. A study led by former Secretary Bill Perry puts it about $37,000. In our view, that underestimates the cost. And I think if you take a look at the two situations here, Colonel Fehrenbach, who's 18 years in the Air Force, something like 1,500 fighter hours, they're forcing him out. He estimates it, you know, they've spent about $25 million training him. But to bring in someone new, to get them to that level, you're going to have to bring in five or six people, you know, because not everybody's going to get promoted. They're going to drop out. Similarly, you have the situation with Lieutenant Daniel Choi, a West Point graduate, an Arab linguist, being put out. And again, we're short of Arab linguists, you know, particularly in the countries where we have military forces. It's not supported by the American people. When President Clinton tried to do it, the majority of the American people were opposed to it. Something like 44% only supported it. Now it's 75%. So with all of that, the question becomes, well, why don't we do it?
So what does his report recommend?
First thing is President ought to issue an executive order stopping the throwing out for people on the basis of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. We've had lawyers take a look at it, and they agree that the president can do that under his stop-loss authority since you've got reserves serving on active duty. And more importantly, people forget in the first Persian Gulf War, we stopped throwing out gays until the war ended. The next thing he needs to do is introduce legislation to repeal it and at the same time change the Uniform Code of Military Justice, because there are provisions in there that would make it illegal for people to engage in certain sexual practices. Then he ought to set up a panel that tells them, you know, exactly how to implement the law, not whether, in fact, to do it. Change the other directives, and we give a list of the directives that need to be changed in the Department of Defense. And then finally, you need follow-up. You can't just assume, well, you pass a law and it's going to change. The experience of both women and African Americans showed that you really have to follow up and make sure that those who don't follow the new procedures are penalized and held accountable, as well as provide the appropriate training.
Korb compared repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell with President Harry Truman's order to integrate black soldiers, and he said the U.S. military would more than get used to openly lesbian and gay service members.
You know, Truman's executive order was issued in 1948. The Department of Defense doesn't disband what they then called Negro units until 1954. But during the Korean War, when you didn't have enough white people to fill in units, they integrated them with African Americans. And I think, you know, after this, you know, situation has changed, they're going to say, you know, we wouldn't want to go back to the old days because we'd be losing valuable people.
That was Lawrence J. Korb discussing a report by the Center for American Progress that lays out the steps President Obama can take to eliminate Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Carl Levin of Michigan, chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee, told reporters this week that congressional action on the issue is going to take some persuasive leadership. On the evening this program is distributed, June 29th, the president is scheduled to host a reception at the White House to observe the 40th anniversary of the Stonewall riots. We'll have more about that next time on This Way Out. I'm Greg Gordon. Did you ever have to find it inside? Three of the best-loved acts in the LGBT music pantheon comprise this stellar edition of The Audiophile.
If I was to find out that you never told me a dad or two, though, well, would I then say, hey, well, no one ever really meant him, I say, yeah, yeah. If I was to forget that you said it'd take a miracle to let yourself love, would I then start listening to the damn voices up inside of my head?
Our show this month features piano ballads, gospel rock, and pop punk music. Hi, I'm J.D. Doyle.
I'm Chris Wilson, and you're listening to Audiophile. The latest album by Scott Friedman is called The Cottage Sessions. And again, he couples his intimate vocals with his intricate piano work.
The new album is kind of going back to basics. Just me and the piano, the way I really started my music out. It's a very kind of bare, intimate album, which matches some of the lyrics, which is really about this concept of cycles. So, like, beginning things and traveling through and ending, but of course, there's this rebirth notion. So it's a kind of intimate album centered around the concept of cycles.
You were a scared little boy pretending to be a man, desperate for love, and it was catch me if you can. Afraid of your own skin, so you tried to wear mine. But I was always shoving you out, trying to convince you yours was fine. I was worth so much more than you gave. But how do you rescue someone who just wants to be saved?
You can learn more about The Cottage Sessions by Scott Friedman at www.scottfriedman.com. That's www.scottfriedman.com.
Are you ready for some pop punk music? Here's Pansy Division with their new album called That's So Gay.
Since 1991, the band Pansy Division has been known for its driving beat and very fun and sexually explicit lyrics. The latest album, That's So Gay, is no exception, as founder John Ginoli explains.
The new album is Pansy Division's first album in 6 years, and it tries to take some of the stuff that Pansy Division is known for, like our humor and naughtiness, with more serious and sometimes more angry songwriting. And with our new guitarist Joel, it might be one of the best sounding records we've ever made. We're really proud of it. In addition to the album That's So Gay, Pansy Division also has released a documentary film on their career,
and John Ginoli has written a book about it. Find out about them all at www.pansydivision.com.
The last two albums by Levi Kreis made our Audiophile Best of the Year shows, so we are very pleased to feature his latest one, called Where I Belong.
Heading into the phone in 14 days, the automated voice on my machine says, mailbox full, please call again, or the message is, hi honey, have you disappeared? You Scorpios are really weird, maybe that's why I can't shake the funk I'm in. I think the only thing that's keeping me alive is a good cup of coffee and songs in the key of life, but I know,
the early gospel influences in Levi's life have come home to him musically in a very positive and uplifting portrayal of his talent.
Where I Belong is undoubtedly my favorite record that I've done in a whole lifetime of recording. It's gone back to my roots in gospel music and Southern soul. It feels more at home to me than any musical experience I've had.
More about the CD Where I Belong at www.levikreis.com. That's www.levikreis.com.
That's it for this edition of Audiophile. You can learn more about Audiophile or contact us by visiting our website at www.audiophile.org. That's www.audiophile.org.
Audiophile is produced by J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum. I'm J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Chris Wilson. Keep listening.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Lee Moore, Michelle Pleasant, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Fergal O'Doherty, and J.D. Doyle, Chris Wilson, and Christopher David Trentum contributed program material. Thanks also to Free Speech Radio News and reporter Jess Burns. The Love & Spoonful, Scott Friedman, Pansy Division, and Levi Kreis performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is underwritten in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to CDs of our program. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WXOJ Northampton, Massachusetts, CJLY Nelson, British Columbia, KUGS Bellingham, Washington, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.
Have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude.
This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
To wear costumes to the KPFT auction. It's a wear that funky costume kind of thing. Fabulous prizes will be awarded to the most awesome, weird, provocative, strange, ecstatic, unemployed, disastrous moment collage of creativity ever put on the KPFT listener body. If decorating your body isn't enough, you could buy a table and decorate it too. Place elephants, giraffes, gorillas, monkeys, lions, cats, cardboard cutouts, posers, fake pirates, runaway radios, ex-spouses, sod, trees, airplanes, boats, trains, surgeons, giant squids, and useless junk on your table. Eat around it, drink around it, share what it means with you. It may be therapeutic, but probably not. More likely just embarrassing. But if you take the grand prize home, who cares? Saturday evening, July 18th, kpftauction.org. Be there. KPFT, kicking intolerant butt for over 30 years.
You're listening to KPFT, Houston 90.1 FM.
KPFT is currently accepting nominations for delegates to the local station board. The local station board is composed of listeners, volunteers, and staff elected to bring diverse voices from our region into the dialogue between community and the station and to assist with fundraising, community outreach, program support, and general governance. The local station board, quite simply, shapes the future of KPFT. There are three ways to qualify to vote and run. Contribute at least $25 to one of the stations, complete 30 or more verified hours, or obtain a special waiver from the local station board. Complete voting, nomination, and deadline information is at kpft.org, or you can contact our local election supervisor, Ann Shaw, at election@kpft.org or 713-526.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.